eMarketer and Insider Intelligence's Chart of the Day newsletter helps leaders to quickly understand key trend data so they can communicate insights to their teams and make sound data-backed decisions. Visit eMarketer.com/newsletters and join the thousands of subscribers who rely on our actionable charts.
But to me, it's a story of execution on the core parts of their retail business, their e-commerce and delivery business, which is growing like gangbusters, the build out of their marketplace, and how all these things work together to help forge the strength of their ad business, their retail media business, which is now growing incredibly quickly.
Hey gang, it's Thursday, June 15th. Debbie, Paul, Andrew, and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by three folks. Let's meet them. We start with our principal analyst for social media based out of Washington. It's Deborah Aho-Williamson.
Hey, Marcus.
Hello there. We're also joined by one of our principal analysts on the retail and e-commerce team based out of Illinois, Chicago specifically. It's Andrew Lipsman.
Hey, Marcus.
Hey, fella. And finally, we have one of our principal analysts who heads up our digital advertising and media practice based out of New York, just above the city. It's Paul Werner.
Great to be here.
Hello. Hello. Folks, today's fact: variety isn't the spice of most people's diets. What am I talking about? Well, a staggering 75% of our calories, 75% of our food, of our energy, comes from just 12 crops and 5 animals. For context, there are more than 50,000 types of edible plants, crops in the world. We choose to eat 12. And there are approximately 1.2 million known species of animal. We mostly eat the same 5. I mainly eat just Chinese food and Nutella sticks.
Well,
it's a miracle I'm still alive.
I love variety, but right now, turmeric is my go-to spice.
Oh, well played. Too soon, Paul, with the jokes. Too soon. Today's real topic. Very specific, but highly unlikely predictions for the rest of the year. In today's episode, we'll cover some very specific but highly unlikely predictions for the rest of the year. No, in other news, we have too many excellent predictions to make. So, how does this episode work? We do it twice a year and we make some predictions that are incredibly specific, and so they may not happen, but we go out on a limb for you. That's what we do, folks. So back in December of last year, you guys made some very specific predictions about what would happen in the first half of 2023, which we are just wrapping up. And so we're going to check in on those for a few minutes, and then we'll get to some brand new ones that we think are going to happen before the year is out. Paul, I'll start with you. What did you predict, and how's it going?
I predicted that TV measurement would not get a single currency, and it did not. I have to say, just for full disclosure, that I also said it wouldn't even get a set of currencies. I don't know that I would say that now. I think there are some measurement providers that are coalescing in that space, so there probably is realistically a set of currencies. Definitely not a single currency, though. I also said that the Bob Iger sequel at Disney wouldn't be as good as the original. The jury's out on that. It was a rocky start for him. And obviously with the company having layoffs and with all the other issues affecting the industry, it's a pretty rough time. But who's to say how that story plays out? And I also said that sports betting would get the scrutiny of the U.S. government. And just recently, Senator Bob Blumenthal of Connecticut wrote a letter basically trying to raise awareness of this issue among U.S. colleges and universities. And there's been some response to that, with some colleges severing ties to sports gambling operations. I think we're just at the beginning stages of the unfolding of gambling and what's going to happen going forward. So more on that later.
Very nice. Debbie, how about you? How's it going with your predictions?
All right. So I made two predictions. My first prediction was about the very hot at the time app called Be Real. Be Real is kind of fallen out of favor a little bit. But the prediction I made was that BeReal will announce its first revenue model, which will not be based on advertising. I was so far wrong about that. They have not come out of hiding to announce any form of revenue model that I can find yet, but they have come out of hiding in other ways. So I'll claim maybe a tiny little bit of accuracy. BeReal has launched multiple new features over the past couple of months. So maybe they will still yet this year announce a revenue model. The other prediction I made was that subscriptions would be a temporary dalliance for Twitter and Snapchat. And I'm going to say that one's wrong-ish. They're nowhere near being able to rival advertising as a revenue stream for these companies, but both of them are still offering them. They've actually been pretty good performance for Snapchat. They now have more than 3 million subscribers for Snapchat Plus. A lot of that is due to the launch of My AI, the chatbot. Twitter Blue, on the other hand, kind of a mess. They removed the legacy checkmark. Paid verification has been a problem. We saw reports that there were only 640,000 paying subscribers to Twitter Blue. So that one's still very much up in the air.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Andrew, how about you, sir?
So my first prediction was that Amazon would revolutionize advertising this year with three sort of sub-bullets to that. The first was Amazon introducing targeting to NFL Thursday Night Football. I'll give myself a check mark there. They actually did announce their plans to do that a few weeks ago. The second piece to that was that they would ramp up their expansion of Amazon Fresh to start to get a lot more grocery data in particular. I'm going to go ahead and say that was wrong because they've done the opposite. They are slowing their roll on the expansion because they haven't gotten physical store grocery right yet, at least not in the Amazon Fresh version. And the third piece to it was that they would reintroduce Amazon Prime samples, sampling of products through Prime orders. And I'll give myself a not yet on that, though I've seen some things that indicate that they may be closer to doing that. My second prediction was that Instacart would finally IPO. I'm going to give myself a not yet on that one, because again, I think they're getting closer and closer, but it just still hasn't quite happened yet. So that remains to be seen. Maybe we'll see it in the second half of the year. And the last one was that Walmart would partner with Paramount Plus with a TV ad targeting and measurement deal. That one also has not happened, but I will also give it a not yet because we haven't gotten to advertising week and the fall TV season when these types of announcements usually ramp up. So yeah, remains to be seen.
Very nice, folks. For people wondering, I predicted that the Lakers would turn things around and they made the Western Conference Finals after coming in, I think, with the 13th seed. So you'll be happy to know that I'm so far winning this game. Let's move into some predictions for the rest of the year. What do we have for you? We've got a ton. Each person made about three, some of them four. So we've got a ton sprinkled in here, 10 plus. We'll start, Paul, with yourself. Splashy one to kick us off. Microsoft or Meta could buy Roku. What's going on here?
What's going on is that
it's a prediction. There's no reporting this. This yes. Probably won't happen. But yeah. Paul thinks it could potentially.
And if I have to go out on a limb and pick one, I'm going to say Microsoft, but I think Meta is sort of a dark horse candidate. We're definitely in a time when I think we're headed to some major consolidation in the media and advertising and tech spaces. And there are companies that are sort of ripe for the picking in terms of being acquisition targets. And then there are companies that have the cash and the strategic imperative to make things happen in adjacent spaces. So I think in this case, I think Roku and Netflix are actually companies that are targets for acquisition because they have very simple business models that are under stress. They don't have a lot of other leverage to change their or to improve their businesses. And they're facing a ton of competition and just a lot of trouble in that space, a lot of, layoffs and just stress in general. So, but I don't think Netflix is going to be acquired anytime soon, if at all. I think Roku is another story. There were actually rumors that Netflix would buy them or Apple would buy them over the past couple of years. That hasn't happened. I think Microsoft, which actually has a partnership with Roku, has a lot of interest in getting further into the entertainment and TV and advertising space. They also have a partnership with Netflix and they're trying to buy Activision Blizzard. that deal hit some roadblocks in the UK, mm-hmm. and it's questions to whether it will pass regulatory approval in the US, but it did in the EU, which is key. So I think there's a lot to be said for Microsoft buying a company that has the devices, the TV advertising know-how, and now increasingly the original content production capabilities.
Mm-hmm. So Roku, we say it's the third largest CTV player in the US, for context, $2 billion a year company, only behind Hulu and YouTube. So significant, but they're not colossal. They are a very significant player when you're ranking these CTV folks. You mentioned Netflix. I mean, if you had to throw it out, that you mentioned they could potentially get bought, less likely. Mm-hmm. Who buys them?
Potentially Microsoft. Mm. But I mentioned Meta before. Meta is another company that has obviously tried to pivot its business to the point of renaming itself and reorienting its business around the metaverse, which hasn't gone very well.
Yeah, it's generous.
Yes. Debbie can speak to this a lot more in a lot more detail than I can, but they've gone through a lot of issues with their core business of social media advertising. They've had for many years aspirations to get further into premium entertainment. And I think this CTV space is one of the most attractive areas, along with retail media, which Andrew can speak to. Mm-hmm. But clearly CTV is a golden opportunity for many companies. Facebook or Meta has not gone there yet in a big way. It has tried. Mm-hmm. So this could give them an entry point into that business.
Mm-hmm. I'm just going to jump in and say, I think, and I will claim some credit for this if it's true also, Paul, that Microsoft and Roku makes much more sense to me than Meta and Roku. You mentioned Microsoft already has a partnership with Roku, and my ears pricked up a little bit when I heard that, because, you know, anytime companies are already familiar with each other, I feel like that's one avenue to making it more likely that a deal could take place.
Right.
I also think it's possible. Roku's more of a tech layer, right? Like they're kind of a platform through which you can access a Netflix, a Fubo, et cetera, from my understanding. So it feels more likely that a tech player and a tech player would get together than a content player like a Netflix and a Microsoft.
Mm. Yeah.
I love this prediction.
The gigantic ones like Netflix are always hard to digest. You know, it seems a little too different from Microsoft to make that work. But Roku does make a lot of sense. And Microsoft seems to be going after the advertising market in a new way. And the biggest kind of missing piece they have is TV. Clearly, the Netflix partnership has helped kind of buy their way into that opportunity to some extent, mm-hmm. but it's not their own asset. So that, to me, Roku represents that inventory. That could really make sense. And also, Roku kind of feels like, I don't know what their next act is. They've almost gone to the end of their logical road.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yep. So speaking of TV, something that is consuming that world at the moment is this writer's strike. Paul, you have a prediction about the writer's strike. First of all, I mean, quickly in 10 seconds, set the scene. What the hell is going on with the writer's strike and what's your prediction?
The Writers Guild, the WGA, Writers Guild of America, went on strike on May 2nd this year. It happened to be right as the upfronts were starting. So it caused a lot of commotion at the TV upfronts.
Yeah. I think not.
What I'm predicting is that this year's strike will be longer than 100 days, which is how long the last one was in 2008, 2009. Mm. And it's also an amount of time that a lot of people see as sort of like, if it goes past that, then the level of disruption is just going to cascade and, you know, get bigger. I think the dynamics are a lot more complex than they were in 2007, 2008. At the time, writers were still angling for things like residuals on DVD rentals. And at the time, Netflix was primarily a DVD rental company. So now you have a situation where content is being produced by players in a lot of different industries, from tech to traditional TV media, and then the likes of, you know, the Rokus of the world. The business model for writers, or the payout for writers, is not nearly as good in digital media right now than it was in previous distribution methods. So I think they're obviously angling for better terms, and the content providers are not that eager to play ball with them. Mm-hmm. Also, the Screen Actors Guild and the Directors Guild have also been in a mode where they're also angling for better terms. The Directors Guild actually just struck a deal with the AMPTP, which is the trade group that represents TV studios and production companies. But the Screen Actors Guild actually voted to authorize a strike. Their contract comes up for renewal at the end of June. So if actors go on strike and writers are already on strike, it just complicates things because it puts a lot more items on the agenda for the AMPTP to deal with. And again, I think they have a lot of bargaining power right now. AI is a big subtext in all of this. I think that's the new technology that everybody's concerned about. Writers are concerned that they're going to be replaced by generative AI tools.
And so talk to us about this, because this is your, this is one of your bonus predictions.
Right, right. And even actors could, you know, on some level, I mean, obviously not in, in feature films just yet, but certainly in an environment where, say, it's like a newscaster who's just reading news on camera. I mean, these are things that AI is currently already able to do. And in a year, 2 years, 5 years, the capabilities are just going to go through the roof. So it's not too futuristic or dystopian to think, for writers and actors to think, that their jobs are under threat and that, you know, they're already in a situation where they feel like they're earning less from the streaming economy than they did from traditional distribution. So this is only accentuating the issues. And it's also a very hard issue to wrap your mind around, because it is technical. Nobody knows how it's going to play out. Yeah. So there's just a lot of unknowns. And we're already, I mean, it started on May 2nd. So we're already close to a month and a half into the strike. So, you know, 100 days is a little more than 3 months. Yeah. That would be August 10th, by the way. So I think there are a lot of people who think it will stretch into the fall. There's obviously a chance that, you know, it could get resolved tomorrow and then I'll look like an idiot, but that will not be the first time that happens.
Stop telling jokes, Paul. They're terrible. That's the only reason. So Paul's got a couple for us out the gate with regards to the media world, the TV world. Microsoft buying Roku, potentially, the writer's strike lasting longer than 100 days, and the use of generative AI in developing and writing TV and movie scripts will accelerate, especially if the writer's strike continues into the fall. So let's get a prediction on something a little different. We're going to go to Debbie for one on search advertising and TikTok. Debbie, what have you got for us?
So first of all, so TikTok, if we rewind almost a year ago, there was a very famous quote that a Google executive said at a conference, at a Fortune conference. And he said that in our studies, something like almost 40% of young people, when they're looking for a place for lunch, they don't go to Google Maps or search. They go to TikTok or Instagram. That quote has been repeated probably hundreds of times. If you were to Google it, you'd find this guy's quote everywhere. And well, it is what I think has created a second renaissance in social search. Social search has been around for a while, and but nobody really paid much attention to it. And all of a sudden, everybody started talking about TikTok and search, TikTok and search, TikTok and search. They conveniently forgot that Instagram was part of that quote too, first of all. So long-winded way of saying, my prediction is that, you know, TikTok is getting all the attention when it comes to this idea of social search, but it's actually going to struggle to get its search advertising business off the ground. There's a couple reasons why. So just to set the scene, TikTok's been testing search advertising for almost a year. Basically, what happens is if you, on certain types of searches that you might do on the platform, video ads will pop up, or promoted videos will pop up in the mix of other videos that you see that are paid for, right? So say you're searching for a new makeup technique. You might see lots of user-generated videos, and then there's one from, say, maybe I'm making this up, but e.l.f. Cosmetics or Sephora or something like that. TikTok has a lot of models to look to this, including its own sister app, Douyin, in China, where the, and this has been a practice for a long time. Advertisers have all have been for years able to use search ads to drive traffic or spur app downloads. But TikTok is kind of moving slowly. It really hasn't gotten to the point of launching the search advertising yet. In the meantime, Instagram has gone from 0 to 60 really quickly. Instagram went from testing search advertising to launching it globally within a couple of months of the announcement. Snapchat has just kind of leapfrogged all of this directly into generative AI, and it's launching sponsored links in its chatbot. Mm-hmm. And there's another thing, you know, for all the focus on TikTok searches, searching on Google or Amazon is really far from being intermediated mm-hmm. by social search. You know, Amazon or search engine is way more likely places than TikTok to begin any sort of search that an advertiser would actually really, really, really be interested in advertising on. So last thing is, TikTok search ad features are pretty underdeveloped compared to what search advertisers are looking for. So yeah, a Google executive may have said it. They also mentioned Instagram. I think TikTok may struggle here. I think Instagram might have a better chance of getting more traction with search advertising. But either way, it's going to be a super interesting thing to watch in the next couple of months and into next year.
So let's look at the space for a second. So search advertising in the US, $110 billion space, $120 billion next year. It makes up 42% of digital ad spend. So that's the market that we're talking about. By company, Google has over half, Amazon 20%, Microsoft and Apple 5% apiece. So that's the landscape. But the Google and Amazon gap, it's about 30% difference now, 20 for Amazon, 50 for Google. But in 2 years, that gap goes from a 30% gap to a 20% gap. Google's share is falling, Amazon's going up, Microsoft and Apple are also slightly increasing their share as well. So yeah, there's a lot of other players who have something else to say about TikTok muscling in on the search advertising space. And as I mentioned, Amazon increasing their share of search ad revenue in the US, but advertising obviously not their main line item business division. One of your predictions has to do with something that they used as their primary business for a long time and still do, which is e-commerce. What do you expect to happen with Amazon's e-commerce for the rest of this year?
Yeah, well, as you mentioned, the advertising business is doing pretty well and outperforming most of the rest of the market. Mm-hmm. But that advertising business is also a function of how much growth they're seeing in their e-commerce business. And that one has been struggling a little bit in relative terms. And I think throughout this year, it's going to continue to struggle and see that kind of tepid growth that we've seen in previous quarters, but not for the reasons that you might think. There's a lot of discussion about maybe the overall consumer economy still being tepid. I would say it's actually healthier in a lot of ways than many think. Consumers have money and they are spending it, just maybe in different areas. There's a lot of discussion about Amazon specifically and the fact that they maybe overexpanded in different parts of their business. They lost focus, too many side projects, all of these things. And so there's this narrative that Amazon is kind of relatively struggling for some of these reasons. All of these things, I think, play a role, but on the margins. The single biggest reason that I think is creating a drag on their e-commerce business is one category, and that category is consumer electronics. It's about 20% of Amazon's e-commerce business, and it is growing, according to our forecast, in low single digits. You know, this is in an area, e-commerce, that is used to growing in double-digit growth rates. So that's just going to create a drag. And I would say, Amazon, it's not your fault. This is what happened. Yeah, Good Will Hunting reference. Amazon, you know, in the pandemic, there were certain categories that demand really did get pulled forward, and people bought up a lot of high ticket purchases in consumer electronics, investing in TVs and sound systems and computers and all these things that they needed for being at home, in addition to things like furniture and stuff like that. These higher ticket categories, they're not on the same upgrade cycle as other categories. So what we're in right now is the sort of pullback in consumer demand and consumer electronics. And I haven't seen any evidence yet that it's ready to bounce back on that natural upgrade cycle. It will happen. I think it's probably we'll start to see some green shoots maybe in 2024. Mm-hmm. But for the near term, it's just not there, and it's going to hit Amazon harder than most as a result. And so I think as long as that's happening, they're going to struggle to get that higher end growth that they're looking for.
Yeah.
I'll say though, I mean, I agree, Andrew, about how search is tied to e-commerce. and Amazon may not be doing as well as we've been used to seeing. But still, when you look at the search business, and this, you know, takes it back to Debbie's prediction, it's interesting that the Google executive was so concerned about TikTok, because really, when you look at search, I mean, 10 years ago, Amazon had 2% of the search market. Now they have 10 times that amount in terms of share. And by 2025, we're expecting they'll have a quarter. So really, that's the
threat.
Yeah, that's the real threat to Google in terms of real dollars. You know, in terms of what could happen if social search really does take off in a major way, or if Microsoft and their investments in AI revolutionize the search market, as I think everybody thought would happen 3 months ago. Now it doesn't seem so sure. But at the end of the day, none of that is going to amount in dollar terms to what I think Amazon represents in that market and how they're stealing share directly away from Google.
Yeah. Andrew, you've got one more prediction in this sphere of delivery, e-commerce delivery and consolidation in this space. What are you predicting here?
Well, so this is a very specific prediction. I think that e-commerce, the whole intermediary delivery market that is constituted by Instacart and DoorDash and Uber and Gopuff and the like, it's a tough business. Debbie has wrote about this way back when. And
so glad you brought this up again.
Well, it's amazing. It's one of the most clairvoyant stories that I've ever seen. It's like Debbie wrote a story for Ad Age, right? A while back that was in the first dot-com boom. And you read it today and it's almost the exact same thing. But I think it kind of boils down to the fact, hey, the economics of this are really hard. And in, you know, a market that is much more uneven now than like 2021, I think a lot of these companies are finding out how hard it is to be profitable. So I think that the space has to consolidate. And there's just one match out there that to me seems almost too perfect. Like, let's make this happen. It's DoorDash and it's Gopuff. I think that DoorDash is big enough that it can be acquisitive. Gopuff, I think, is, I'm not sure where they go from here. But what DoorDash has been trying to do, I mean, they really have done an excellent job executing and owning the restaurant delivery market and moving into retail media and that segment of the market. They're trying to move into grocery and CPG. And I haven't seen the evidence yet that it's working out particularly well. I don't know if consumers are looking at DoorDash and thinking, I'm going to use that for grocery delivery. But they will do it for Gopuff. That's what Gopuff is known for. So why not just buy your way into that market? I think there's a lot of synergies and the kind of right adjacencies where, to me, DoorDash can more easily execute on its vision of what it wanted to do in that market. And, you know, I think now is probably the right time to buy a company like Gopuff. So to me, it just makes a lot of sense.
Let's stay in the retail world. We talked about some Amazon. One of their big competitors, particularly online, is Walmart. Andrew, you've got a prediction about Walmart for us.
Yes. Well, this one is, I think that Walmart is just going to be almost hands down the retailer of the year for 2023. How will we know if I am right? You can ask me at the end of the year and then I get to determine who's the retailer of the year. I mean, Walmart's executing incredibly well right now. I mean, if you look at Amazon, Target, Dollar General, three of kind of, I'd say its closest competitors in slightly different ways. All those companies have not had their best quarters recently, but Walmart has. It continues to do well. So I think Walmart is going to be the sort of the retailer of the year because it's executing. And we don't, you know, the narrative might be, well, Walmart's going to benefit from inflation and people trading down. And again, some of those things might be true. But to me, it's a story of execution on the core parts of their retail business, their e-commerce and delivery business, which is growing like gangbusters, the build out of their marketplace, and how all these things work together to help forge the strength of their ad business, their retail media business, which is now growing incredibly quickly, about 40% year over year. So to me, they're just executing on all fronts. And I think they deserve a lot of credit. And other retailers, especially as we move in the sort of post, I don't want to say post Amazon, but to the next stage of retail media, where it's going to be much more about the growth of brick and mortar retail media networks. I think that Walmart becomes the object lesson there that everyone is going to be chasing and saying, right, what did Walmart do right?
All right. I just had a couple of retail ones for you. Let's grab another social media prediction. Debbie, yours is on Instagram Threads. What are we talking about?
It is. But before we go on, I have been just sort of silently cracking myself up trying to imagine DoorPuff, GoDash, DoorGoPuffDash.
The possibilities.
Like, what is this name of this combined company? I want to know.
When Andrew said, where will GoPuff go? I figure, you know, if DoorDash just swallows up the brand, then they just go puff, right?
Oh, gosh. Paul, we
talked about see, you were doing the same thing the whole time Andrew was talking.
But I always do that, Debbie. That's my brand.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why we bring Paul on.
Paul, I'm just in awe. You know what? There is no one better at those puns, and I'm here for it.
It's punishment.
Oh my gosh. Okay. So social media terrible prediction. Back to that, right? Okay.
Yep.
So my prediction is about an app that Instagram has yet to launch, but is lots of rumors are flying around. And as of now, it doesn't even have a name. It's been called P92 or Barcelona, or most recently the word Threads came about, which is actually the name of something that Instagram tried to launch a few years ago and then shut down. What am I talking about here? Instagram Threads, if we're going to call it that, I'm going to go with that as the name. That's not my prediction, but my prediction is that advertiser support for this new app that Instagram wants to launch, maybe called Threads, will be thin.
How come?
Threads is a new text-based app intertwined with Instagram. It is being called a knockoff of Twitter, perhaps a Twitter killer. It will allow users to seamlessly transfer over their profiles and their followers. And by the way, Twitter may not need Instagram to kill itself. Anyway, what will Threads do? It'll enable creators to share updates in new and old ways. They'll be able to write text posts. Da, 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 da. This is what it sounds like when you try to mimic Twitter. Mm-hmm. You can write text posts up to 500 characters and attach links or photos or videos to it. This whole idea of text-based communication is experiencing a revival. Even as Twitter is struggling, we're seeing things like Blue Sky and Mastodon and now Threads and even TikTok potentially allowing you to post text on your app. But sounds great, but I think advertising success for it is not guaranteed. Mm-hmm. There's a few reasons for that. First one is it's a new format for Instagram. So advertisers aren't going to just jump on it because it's from Meta. They're going to need proof, right? Mm-hmm. Users are using it. Creators are there because they want to be there, not because Meta's paying them to be there or giving them some sort of incentive to be there. Meta doesn't have a great track record of monetizing Me Too products. It's still trying to figure out how to monetize Reels, and it's way, way behind TikTok on this. Another reason, advertisers are really basically all in on social video right now. They've just barely made the pivot finally to spending a lot of money on social video. Are they going to go back to text advertising? I don't know. And lastly, Twitter's not that big of an ad business. Why would Instagram try to be Twitter? Twitter made under $5 billion at its peak in 2021, pre-Musk, and that was less than 10% of what Meta made that year.
Yep.
So I don't think we're going to see a whole lot of advertiser support for Threads. And we're remains to be seen about creators as well.
Mm-hmm. Pretty convincing. All right, folks, we've got a couple more for you, a couple of the bonus ones. We're going to go quick on these. We'll start with one from Andrew about Meta's ad business.
Yeah. So real quick one. I think Meta's ad business, we've seen the first quarter of it start to rebound a bit and perform better than expected. I think that's going to continue. But again, playing off of my theme, not for the reasons that you might think. Mm-hmm. The narrative is about maybe improving Reels monetization and about, sort of retuning their algorithm for targeting post-ATT. Now they finally sort of figured it out. When I look at the business, I still see that they are missing data. They have irrevocably lost certain data signal that can't be purely retuned in the algorithm. I think there's something else going on here that isn't being talked about. And that is that Facebook or Meta started modeling out ROAS that they are missing. And as a result of that, I think advertisers, particularly the long tail of advertisers, SMBs who make up so much of Facebook ad spend, are looking at that number, that modeled out ROAS number, and they are starting to invest again in the platform because they are taking the number that's put in front of them. And I think it has a powerful impact, even if that number isn't purely deterministic and is more probabilistic than it was in the past.
Mm-hmm. Debbie, you have a quick one for us on Meta as well with regards to Messenger.
I do. And so the background here is that Meta in March started a test of allowing some users of Facebook to access their messages without leaving Facebook, without having to use Facebook Messenger, which is kind of a back to the future because previously before Messenger was around, you could do that. And so my prediction is that Meta is actually will no longer require users to go to Messenger if they want to send messages on Facebook. There are a variety of reasons for that. User growth has been pretty much at a standstill, especially in the US. There's a huge trend with messaging right now where people want to message in the apps that they're already using. They don't necessarily want to go somewhere else. And in the case of Messenger, a lot of them are already Facebook users. So why make them go to a second app? Not that Meta is going to go away from messaging, quite the contrary. It is a huge pillar of their business. They're working on chatbots. They're working on all sorts of things related to messaging. But I think that Messenger's days, particularly in the US, maybe elsewhere, may be numbered.
Interesting. And one final one from Andrew, staying with social media. We're talking Twitter. Andrew, what do you got for us?
I don't think Linda Yaccarino is going to make it till the end of 2023.
The new CEO of Twitter.
The new CEO.
Elon. Okay.
And listen, I think in many ways she's the best possible choice because the ad business is hemorrhaging to try and win back. I just don't see how she's going to be able to do it. And at the end of the day, she's dealing with a very impulsive Elon Musk who determines her fate. Mm-hmm. And if things aren't going the way that he wants quickly enough, I see too much potential for conflict and a relationship that will end in a breakup.
When the news leaked that she was going to be hired as CEO of Twitter and that her start date was 6 weeks out, a lot of people predicted she wouldn't even make it to her start date. So she made it this far, but only because she moved up the start date. But I agree with Andra. I think if she doesn't make it and that there's a good chance that will come true, it won't be because of her or even because of Twitter. It'll be just because of Musk's management style and how it's almost impossible to work for someone like that and have any degree of continuity or expectation of being able to carry out an agenda. It's just every day is a fire drill.
Debbie, you cover social for us real quick. What do you think? Does she make it?
Yeah. I'm going to go out on the limit here and say she makes it longer than we think she will. So year end is not that far. It's 6-7 months. Mm-hmm. I bet she makes it to year end. Does she make it a full year from her start date? That is, I'm not sure about.
All right, folks. They're the predictions we have for you for this episode. We had Microsoft buying Roku, the writer's strike lasting longer than 100 days, the use of generative AI in developing and writing TV, movie scripts becoming more prevalent, search advertising won't be a slam dunk for TikTok, Amazon's e-commerce growth will continue to struggle, Walmart will be the retailer of the year, according to Andrew's list. Advertiser support for Instagram Threads will be thin. Meta's ad business rebound will continue through the balance of the year. And Meta no longer requiring users to go to Messenger. And finally, Linda Yaccarino, Twitter's new CEO, not making it to the end of the year. Real quick, folks, which of these do you think is most likely? Debbie, I'll start with you.
I'm going to go out on a limb here and say Microsoft acquiring Roku.
Okay. Most likely?
Most likely.
Most likely. Andrew?
So I like the Microsoft Roku one the most, but that one is inherently difficult to predict. I like, in terms of most likely, the writer's strike. I think it is going to be protracted.
Mm-hmm. And Paul?
I think I'll go with Walmart being the retailer of the year and exercising its muscle in all the areas that Andrew mentioned. But I also agree with all of Debbie's predictions. So it's hard to pick one. I mean, you know, they're all our children. So hard to pick a favorite. I just want to say as a parting thought regarding Linda Yaccarino, you know, she is a fan of the show, a friend of the show. She's been on the show. Yeah. So I wish her all the best, whatever that looks like for her.
Best of luck. And Mum, if you're listening, let's be real. I'm your favorite. That's what we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Debbie.
Thank you, Marcus. This is one of my favorite episodes to record.
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed. And thank you so much to Paul.
Always a pleasure.
And thank you to Andrew.
Thank you. Always good to do this episode with you, Debbie and Paul.
Absolutely. We'll see you guys in 6 months to see how they've done. In December, right before Christmas, is when we revisit these predictions and see if they came true. Spoiler alert, they would have. That's what we've got time for. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone listening in. We'll see you guys tomorrow, hopefully, for the Behind the Numbers Weekly Listen and eMarketer Podcast.